getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about what the new tax bill means for your divorce. Now, there's been lots of talk about the tax bill that was passed in December, but listening to the news reports, there's been two things that have struck me. First, the articles and TV interviews that I've seen, other than talking about the spousal support or alimony and tax change, they don't really specifically reference the other changes and how those changes would impact people getting divorced. So if you're not familiar with current tax rules, it would be easy to miss a change or to think that you're not impacted. The second thing that I've noticed is that the details are often missing, such as in what tax year changes become effective. And that can be critical when you're negotiating your divorce settlement, because most of the time, once that settlement becomes a court order, you are done. There are no do-overs, and your soon-to-be ex is not likely to renegotiate something because you didn't understand the impact of a tax law change. So, now most of us are not going to wade through the tax bill itself. So what we need is a summary in plain English that spells it all out for us. And my guest today has done just that, and we owe him a huge big thank you. My guest is Michael Wayland. Michael is an assistant professor of business at Methodist University, and he's also a mediator. So welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Mandy. I'm glad to be here.
So, Michael, I thought we would start with the tax change that has been most commonly talked about, and that is the change with respect to alimony, and just very kind of it's now so that it's not going to be tax deductible for the person who's paying it, and it won't be taxable to the person who's receiving it. So what does that mean for... and I should say that takes effect in the tax year for agreements signed after December 31st, 2018.
Correct. So essentially January 1st, 2019.
Okay. All right. But that's for, so if you signed your agreement on December 31st, though, you're still under the old tax law.
Correct.
Okay. So what do you think that means for people getting divorced? Is that a big plus or minus?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is I think a very significant issue, and it's maybe the one that's had the most attention paid to it in the press. Although, as we talk, I think there's a number of other issues that are very significant too that your listeners should know about. But relative to what's either called alimony or spousal support or separate maintenance, depending on what state you're in. The big shift is from in the past, that was deductible to the payor and it was taxable to the recipient. And in that process, it's what we would call income shifting. So you're shifting income from the payor to the recipient. Tax rates changed. So, for example, if the payor was in, say, a 25% tax bracket spousal support or alimony was deductible to that person, for them to pay $100, it really only cost them $75. On the other hand, for the recipient, very frequently they're in a lower tax bracket, so they receive the income, and maybe they're in a 10 or a 15% tax bracket. They get that income, but they only pay, let's say they receive the $100, they'll still get $90 of that $100, or if they're in the 15% bracket, 15%, they'll get 85 of that $100. And so through that income shifting, the couple, even though no longer a married couple, they would save taxes because of shifting it from the higher tax bracket to the lower tax bracket. What that enabled people to do is have the payor pay more.
Right. So did you...
And so this change impacts that.
So have you found that couples are kind of willing to unite and save taxes and because they They want to give the government less taxes, or is it still kind of like a self-interested negotiation?
Well, you know, the clients that I deal with always, you know, number one, are concerned that they are able to survive post-divorce and that they're able to provide for their children post-divorce. But how they do that sometimes is a mystery to them. And so I'm able to help them work through that. So, for example, I use a program called FinPlan from Westlaw that allows me to put in, you know, their incomes and their deductions. And what it does is it allows me to show them what their after-tax cash available for living is. And we can do different scenario analyses so that, you know, if you pay this amount in child or spousal support and child support or that amount in child and spousal support, then here's what you will both individually have after tax to really live on. And so we can try to maximize the after tax income for both people.
So
they
you
may not have started with that as an objective, but they understand that when they get there.
So you try and encourage people to look at the after tax rather than just the numbers?
I do, because, you know, what I find in negotiating or mediating a settlement is if you tell somebody, you know, you have to pay $100 in spousal support, they go, wow, $100, I can't afford that. But when they begin to understand that, at least in the past, that $100 really only cost them $75, they can become a lot more amenable to it. Unfortunately, that is going away now.
So what that means then in the new scenario is $100 costs the payor $100.
Mm-hmm.
And the recipient gets $100 then, and they don't lose any of that to tax.
Correct. Exactly like
child support.
So with child support, there is no taxable implication to child support. That will now be the case after January 1st, 2019, there'll be no tax implication on the spousal support either.
Okay.
But by taking that tax implication away, there actually is a huge implication for people.
Yeah, so we're going to have to look at other places to negotiate. But I have one more question about this topic before we move on is, what about if you have an existing agreement and it's modifiable and you want to go to court and modify it, would that be grandfathered under these arrangements, or don't we know?
Well, anything that's signed prior to that date, so prior to January 1st, 2019, is covered under the old law and grandfathered in. But what's interesting is they put an addition in this law that says after that date, if you would like to go back and renegotiate your existing old grandfathered agreement, you can do that as long as the new agreement refers back to this new law. So what I anticipate is a rush of people going back to court or going back to mediation or just renegotiating on their own to make some adjustments to their divorce settlement.
Before December 31st, 2018?
No, actually after that. So
I'm sorry, I must have misunderstood you then.
No, that's okay. No, so what the law is saying is even those cases that are grandfathered, come January 1st, 2019, you can go back and renegotiate them and have the new law apply to them, even though they were grandfathered under the old law. And as long as you now refer back to this new law, you can renegotiate that and have the new law apply.
So that means you would be saying that you wanted it to be non-taxable.
That's what the law allows you to do. Now, whether or not that's wise is a whole other issue, but the law allows you to do that. And so I think there will be a lot of people out there who will say, hey, you know, I'm receiving $100 right now, but I pay tax on it, so I'm only getting $85. I'd like to get the whole $100, so I'd like to go back and have this thing relooked at. So that's what causes me to think there's going to be a rush back to the courts to redo this stuff.
And of course, the person who's paying it will say, oh, I don't want that change to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly, yes. Because it's certainly a penalty to the payor, but could be a windfall to the recipient.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so we don't know how those will play out, and they'll have to talk to their attorneys about that.
Yes, the courts have not gotten there yet, but over the course of the next 12 months, I think they will start to gel and have some consensus around how they'll handle those issues.
Okay. All right. So next topic I thought we'd talk about is child tax exemptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it comes up in all of the agreements that I see where there's a negotiation, like if there's one child, they often agree to alternate years. If there's two children, then one mm-hmm. party will take one child, the other party will take the other child, and arrangements like that. Can you just run us through, what did the tax law bill do to these child exemptions?
Yeah, it's a big difference now. So it really has eliminated the individual exemptions. So as a taxpayer, you would have the individual exemption for yourself, if you were married, for your spouse, if you had children, for each of your children, if your grandmother was a dependent, for your grandmother. And now it's wiped that all away. So each of those exemptions were $4,050 a piece. So if it was, a mother and a father and four children, is 4,050 times four. Now, that's a lot of dollars in terms of exemptions that have gone away. So looking forward then, people who previously would have maybe argued or negotiated over who gets to claim the children so that they can get the exemption of $4,050 per child no longer have that to argue over.
And does that take effect? It's still going to apply for the 2017 tax year. So people who are doing their taxes right now, those exemptions still exist, but it would be for the tax year 2018 and going on.
Correct. Yes.
And it applies to existing arrangements. So if you have, sweated that arrangement out with your other parent before now, then that's all going away.
The individual exemptions all go away. They have now gone away as of January 1st of this year.
Okay.
Wow. Regardless of whether you were married, divorced, previously, currently, for everybody, gone.
So do you see parties trying to renegotiate their agreement to kind of try and compensate for this?
Potentially, I think so. So when you start to look at all the different pieces of the tax law and you start to see certain things changing, whether it's, the alimony or spousal support or the dependent deduction, it really takes an analysis to sit down and say, okay, how does this really impact me and my after-tax income? Because that after-tax income is really what's important to be able to support yourself and to support your children.
Hmm. Right. So when I read about this change and preparing for the show, I was thinking the other cautionary note here is about making agreements with your spouse about things that you may have no control over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So, one of the difficulties for couples is right now many don't understand the changes that are happening with the tax law or how that will impact them. So throughout 2018, as people work on divorce settlements, if they're not aware of these changes, they could make an agreement. And as you said in your intro, there are no do-overs.
Yeah. So with the child tax exemption gone, they've raised the individual standard deduction, mm-hmm. though. So that does that kind of balances out the absence of a child deduction? Does it?
Well, in the mind of the lawmakers, I think the answer is yes. I think that their intent was that we're going to take away these individual exemptions for you know, for a parent, for children, for dependents. But instead, what we're going to do is raise the standard deduction. So, for example, the standard deduction for a head of household in the past was $9,550. Now it will be $18,000. And so while the exemption for the dependents has gone away, the standard deduction has elevated. So their thought was maybe they offset each other.
Right. And then to your point, it's just going to be really important for people to look at their after-tax position and try and get together with a professional who has access to software such as you do, and to help them guide that before they start panicking about not having sufficient mm-hmm. money. So,
right. Exactly.
Well, Michael, we are going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to come back and ask you to talk about head of household.
Okay, I'll be here.
Great. Listeners, I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce, and today we're talking about what the new tax law means for your divorce. And my guest today is Michael Wayland. Michael is an assistant professor of business at Methodist University and is also a divorce mediator. Michael, you've written a white paper which talks about all these changes and which is an amazing resource for people. I wondered if you would share with our listeners how they can get a copy.
Sure. The easiest way to do it is go to our website, which is ChristianDivorceServices.com, and just simply click on the tab that says Resources and Articles, and that white paper will be right at the top there. And when you click on it, it will say new for the white paper. And it'll say impact of tax reform on divorce.
Great. And I will put that link in the show write up. So, Michael, as a mediator, you work with people from all over the country?
I do. I work nationally. So Christian Divorce Services is really a national mediation firm, specifically targeting Christians who are going through divorce, although we certainly work with anybody. And we have offices, I think, in every state in the union. But, well, I should say the continental states.
Right. So did you do, when you are hired as a mediator, is it in person or are you doing it via the phone or via the internet? Just curious.
I travel. And so I take a limited number of cases per month.
Right.
I will travel to the client and meet at one of our offices. And we usually ask the client to set aside a day. And during that day, we'll walk through all of the issues associated with the divorce. And our goal is, at the end of the day, we'll walk away with a full and complete settlement in the case. Now, we do a lot of upfront work with them beforehand, and there's also some follow-through afterwards.
Right.
But it's a very effective model.
Wow. That's interesting. Nice to hear a different way of doing mediation. I'd like to jump back into our tax topic. And before the break, you had mentioned about head of household. And I have found when I've talked to people, there's still some confusion about what head of household is. But I wondered if you could just tell me, like, what is head of household? Does it still apply?
Yes. Okay. So traditionally, you think of filing your taxes as married, or you might think of filing your taxes as single, but there's this other status called head of household, which is an adult who also has a dependent. And so that head of household has different tax rates than does, say, a single person. And so the head of household filing status is more beneficial for people up to a certain income level. And so if you're able to have head of household status, you'll have a more favorable tax status up to a certain amount of taxable income.
And what makes you eligible to file head of household?
As long as you have a dependent. So if you're divorced and it's yourself and you have a child, you are eligible to file head of household. And there's a significant difference between that and filing single.
Right.
So let me give you an example in terms of the actual tax rates. So if you are head of household, you are taxed at a 15%, or excuse me, at a 12% tax rate on the income that you earn from $13,000 up to $51,800. If you're making $51,000, that income's being taxed at 12%, whereas if you were single, that 12% only goes up to $38,000.
Oh, okay.
After $38,700, you now go into the next tax bracket, which is 22. You jump up for that next level of income from 12% to 22%. At $38,000 as a single person instead of $51,800 as a head of household. So that head of household status really helps you tax-wise.
So it not only helps you with this bigger standard deduction to start with, it lowers your marginal rates of tax.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It does. And so when we're working with clients trying to negotiate settlements, oftentimes the parties will argue over or debate over, who gets to quote unquote deduct the children. And so there's certain tipping points where there's a significant difference, either positive or negative, for either an individual or the couple as to how they do that. So keeping that in mind then, for example, if there's two children and each could claim head of household status, then income up to about $103,000, assuming both people had equal income, that's at the 12% rate. But if one person claimed both, then the person who now would be filing single instead of head of household, they've got that 12% rate only up to $38,700.
Okay.
So there's there's different breakpoints there, and really analyzing how you allocate those deductions versus the new tax rates makes a significant difference for both individuals.
Right. But so if you and your soon-to-be ex have one child, you can't both file as head of household, though. Can you?
That's correct. So, no, you cannot. So oftentimes what people will do as part of the mediation or negotiation process is to say, well, okay, you take the child in even years as a deduction, and I'll take the child in odd years as a deduction. So in 2018, I'll be head of household, and in 2019, you'll be head of household. And so they would alternate every year. They don't have to, but that's a frequent approach to it.
Okay. And so can you still do that? You can still put that in an agreement now and agree to alternate if you only have one child?
You can, yes.
Okay, all right. So that would be, that's a big negotiation point. We just were talking about filing statuses, and there's mm-hmm. one that I think is relevant for people who are going through divorce, and I've had a couple of clients who've used this quite recently, and that's filing married but separately. And the situations I've seen is really where there's been a breakdown in communications, and actually the clients that I'm thinking of hadn't filed their 2016 taxes. So my client went ahead and filed their 2016 taxes separately because they did not have access to all of the information to be able to file jointly, and they wanted to go ahead and file. But you're saying up until now there's been a penalty for filing separately.
There has been, yes. So if you filed with the status of married filing separately, you did not have the same tax benefit as married filing jointly. So, for example, if you were married filing jointly, your joint income up to $77,400, that would be the top of the marginal tax rate for 12%. Whereas if you were married filing separately, it's only $38,700. That's under the new rate. under the old rate, it was different. And so what people would do is they'd say, well, I'm afraid of what my ex is going to do tax-wise. I don't have access to all the information. I'm not comfortable. I'm not sure. So I want to file married filing separately. They then talk to their accountant who says, oh, no, don't file married filing separately. You need to stay married filing jointly because that will keep the two of you in a lower marginal tax rate and overall lower taxes. And then you guys should just go figure out how you're going to split the refund where taxes due. There's a lot of dangers to that. But now with the new tax law, you're treated equally, whether you are married filing jointly or married filing separately. Married filing separately is exactly half of the married filing jointly tax rate.
So this seems like it's a positive change.
I think it will be, because when people oftentimes will separate physically, they'll separate emotionally, but then they'll be advised by an accountant not to separate financially. So Now people are going to be free to be able to separate financially, separate their bank accounts, separate their taxes, their income, and not worry that the other person is going to do something dastardly tax-wise.
Okay. And so this change would be for taxes filed for tax year 2018.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to move us on because I do want to talk about this topic before we run out of time, and that is mortgage interest on mortgages. And can you tell us what's happening there? Is it going away? Is it staying?
Mm-hmm. So the home mortgage interest deduction is really important, and it also plays into the real estate tax issue. But when people separate or divorce and they negotiate a settlement, oftentimes what goes into that is who is going to retain the house. And in terms of budgeting and being able to survive, whether or not you're able to deduct home mortgage interest on your taxes has a significant positive benefit for you if you can deduct it. Well, that's going away. Well, it's not really going away, but because the standard deduction has been raised so significantly, the interest deduction is going to have to exceed the standard deduction before it makes any difference. In other words, below $24,000 of itemized deductions, it doesn't make a difference for a married couple.
Okay.
Or for a head of household, it's $18,000. So if you don't have $18,000 in itemized deductions, which for most people usually is going to be the home interest deduction and maybe is some healthcare expenses, if your monthly payment isn't that high minus the principal, then it really doesn't have a benefit for you.
Okay, but you may be getting the benefit anyway because of this increased deduction.
You're getting that increased standard deduction regardless.
Right.
So now if you get that higher standard deduction, but let's say your mortgage payment is $1,500 a month, and of that, maybe $1,200 a month was interest, you no longer get to deduct that $1,200 a month interest because it doesn't exceed the standard deduction. It's moot. So that owning the home and having the associated deduction is not a benefit for people unless you're at a higher monthly payment level or a higher income level.
And so what happens, I already have my mortgage. Am I impacted by this?
If you have an existing mortgage, existing prior to November 15th, 2017, then it's grandfathered in. And even more interesting is you can actually refinance that existing mortgage at a later point and continue to be grandfathered.
So what does what does grandfathered mean though? Does it mean that I still get to deduct the mortgage interest even above the regardless of the standard deduction?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. So you kind of, that just creates the motivation to hold on to the existing mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
But then you were going to say refinancing.
Yeah. So if a couple is married and the mortgage is joint in both people's names, which it typically is,
yeah,
and they separate or divorce, then the spouse residing in the house, appropriately so, has their name on the mortgage. But the spouse who has departed also still has their name on the mortgage, and they're still jointly responsible for it. And even if a divorce court says the spouse residing in the house is responsible for the payment, the divorce court does not have the authority to change the existing mortgage between the mortgage company and the borrowers. So the best the divorce court can do is say, okay, spouse in the house, you have to pay the mortgage. But that doesn't get the other spouse off of the mortgage. They're still there. They're still responsible for it. And it hits their credit report if the person doesn't make a payment. And it also impacts their debt to income ratio if they were to apply for their own mortgage.
Right.
So then that puts the person staying in the house in the situation of needing to refinance the mortgage or to take out a home equity line of credit to be able to get, in the case of refinancing, get the person off of the existing debt, or in the case of the line of credit, be able to get equity out of the house in order to move that over to the other person.
Right. So the person who refinances in their own name, you're saying that that could be grandfathered under the tax law so that the interest, mortgage interest, is still deductible?
Potentially. So here's the issue that's not yet clear, and it's really lender dependent. So if you have a mortgage by two people, say a husband and a wife, and they go to refinance their mortgage together, you're taking a mortgage that has two people on it and refinancing it with those same two people, that's pretty clear. But if you now say, we're going to transfer this real estate from joint ownership to an individual, and that individual now is going to get a mortgage for their now new individual property, will a lender consider that to be a refinance, or do they consider that to be a new loan? Is it a refinance? Well, one of the parties is still there, but the other one isn't. So it's really not clear how lenders will view that, but then that has a huge tax implication.
And also, I guess if you were refinancing with some cash out to buy out the other person, whether that is a refinance or actually a new loan.
Exactly, yeah. And it's really going to be lender dependent, I think. Certain lenders will view an individual coming in and saying, hey, I'm going to take this property from a joint asset to my personal asset, so I'm essentially buying it or taking it over, and I need a loan to do that. And when I do that, I'm going to take equity out and give some of that equity to the other person. Is that a new loan or is it a refinance? Don't know. That's something that's going to have to be worked through in 2018, but it has big implications.
Yeah. We're running out of time, but I'm just thinking I probably don't want to be refinancing my house then in the next 3 months, because I'd like to give those mortgage lenders a few months to figure out their rules on this so that I know what going into this, how it's going to impact me.
Yes, and definitely working with maybe an independent mortgage broker who can shop different lenders, who can find a loan product that fits your situation is, I think, better than going just to the bank where you have your checking account and saying, can you refinance my loan? Because they can only do what that particular bank can do.
Right.
But the mortgage broker can shop everybody.
Wow. Michael, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for doing all the hard work of figuring this out for us.
You're welcome, Mandy. I'm glad to be able to do that, and I'm glad you reached out to me.
Yeah, and would you like to just share with our listeners one more time? Because I know we haven't gotten time to talk about home equity loans, and I know that that's in your white paper. So could you share with our listeners where they can go to get your white paper so that they can get all of this information?
Sure. If you go to ChristianDivorceServices.com and click on the tab that says Articles and Resources, right at the top there will be an article about the new tax law. That's the white paper that we put out, and that will tell you everything about home equity all the way through spousal support.
Great. Thank you, Michael. Listeners, we've been talking about the new tax law and what it means for your divorce. And my guest today was Michael Wayland, who's an assistant professor of business at Methodist University, and he's also a mediator. This is important stuff. It takes time and effort for even financially literate people to keep up with these changes. If you're new to this, and if this is something that your spouse has always handled in the past, then this is absolutely the time to make the commitment to educate yourself about your finances and how it works. This is all part of taking responsibility of your life, and it's about taking charge of your future. But don't expect to learn it overnight. Do give yourself time. Be kind to yourself. And I was just have one suggestion is that you can start making this change by whenever something financial comes up in a conversation that you don't understand, ask the person that you're speaking to explain it to you. And then gradually you'll get to understand, and your knowledge will build and build, and you'll be in a better place to manage your finances. If the person you're talking to won't explain it to you, or they can't explain it to you in a way that you understand, then find another professional to work with. Now, this may not be a very interesting topic for you, but understanding it will have a huge impact on your future. And just because you haven't figured it out before doesn't mean that you can't do it now. You can do this. I want to thank you for listening. I'm Mandy Walker. I hope you'll join us next time for more conversations about divorce.